This week, we discuss the Super Bowl, how many people streamed, and what was the experience like. We look at why Disney Plus has almost already made its goals for 2020, and why YouTube TV is now the third largest vMVPD in America. Let's get started.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Video News In-Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon joins me from In-Screen Media from LA this week, right, Colin?
I'm in LA, yes. I'm down here for the Digital Entertainment World Conference and moderating a panel this afternoon on today's video mix, which looks to be a very interesting discussion. But we have three topics we want to cover today, not least of which is the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and speaking of, I hope you've mopped up your tears by now. It was a tough one for you guys, huh?
Yeah, it was tough, but you know, who can be too sad to lose to see Andy Reid win his first Super Bowl after all the years he's been coaching? I mean, it's a great story. He coached a great game, and he has a truly great quarterback. Patrick Mahomes was pretty stellar in that last quarter, wasn't he?
Yeah, once he woke up, he was pretty stellar. He was pretty unstellar up until that point, though. It was kind of painful to watch. But you're actually going to get us started with a relatively quick review of some of the key Super Bowl streaming stats from the game. And then we're going to transition into talking about Disney Plus, which Disney announced earnings report this week. And then we're going to talk about YouTube, which Google disclosed its performance for the first time this week. But before we get started, we have to note a milestone of our own here, which is that this is our 500th podcast, Colin. How does that make you feel?
Makes me feel old.
Old. Exactly.
Yeah, that's quite an achievement. Well, if you've stuck with us the whole way through, we really thank you for your patience because they haven't all been great. I'm sure of that.
We're doing our best here. What can we say? We're doing our best.
We sure are.
But let's jump in, Colin. Super Bowl stats.
But anyway, let's get on with the Super Bowl. So Super Bowl actually did pretty well. Last couple of Super Bowls have lost audiences. But this one actually ticked up a little, just under 2% to 99.9 million people apparently watched. That's Nielsen's official stat. And as I say, that's a little bit up on last year, a little bit of an improvement. The interesting thing, of course, we're always going to focus on is the streaming part. And the official streaming numbers from Fox Properties was 3.4 million. And I say official because there was actually a lot more than that streaming, but I'll get to that in just a second. I don't know about you, but my experience with it was very good. I was jumping in and out of two apps on two different devices and comparing them to the broadcast stream that I was watching. I was actually watching on an over-the-air antenna, which is really, really good quality. And also the fastest that you can get, the fastest feed that you can get. But I was really very impressed. I was using Yahoo Sports on my mobile, and actually at the break, Will, I took my dog for a walk and was watching. when I was walking around the neighborhoods, and it trucked right on. So I got to see Shakira and J-Lo. Man, that was some outfit she was wearing. I got to watch that running around the neighborhoods, and I was really quite impressed. I never could not get in. Every time I tried to get in, I got in, and I saw delays of about 50 seconds on mobile behind what the TV feed was and about 30 seconds on the Fox Sports app on my home Wi-Fi. And the quality was in general very, very good, and I checked social media. There didn't seem to be a lot of complaints about it not working very well. So apparently that all went well. What was your experience? I'm sure you streamed some of it.
I did. I streamed some of it. I watched the game via YouTube TV on my Roku, and I also opened my iPad and my Just my iPad and my computer, and I streamed some of the game on both of those, and it was totally seamless to me. I experienced no problem at all. I didn't check it on other apps or other devices, but I thought overall it was just back and forth. There was a little bit of delay on the app side, so some latency versus what I was seeing on TV, but even that wasn't very significant. So I thought overall very solid.
Yeah, me too. So I mentioned that 3.4 million was only the official number. Actually, the way they count things these days is the virtual MVPDs get sort of rolled in, or most of them get rolled into the traditional TV figures. But it's a bit confusing because not all of them are there. So if you try and do the math, it doesn't quite work out right. But anyway, I went back and I estimate there's about 9.5 million virtual MVPD subscribers, and assuming that they got the same share that TV got, which was 41.6, that means about 7.4 million people were streaming the game, which is 23% up on last year. Mm-hmm. So I think there was quite a big increase. And as I say, by all accounts, everything seemed to go pretty smoothly with all of the virtual MVPDs and with the Fox Sports Online and with the Yahoo Sports app. So, plaudits. So I think actually I was just talking to Verizon Media yesterday. Ari City, I did a quick interview with him, which is up on my website, talking to him about how they did it. They were a key provider for that. So if people want to know more about how to stream a massive event like that, they should check out that video.
Yeah, pretty impressive. As you're saying, 7.5 million streamers. No issues, no real issues anyway, that we could find ourselves.
And actually, I didn't know this, Will. I'd failed to notice this, but there were, Arif was telling me that they did the 4K HDR stream, which was streaming at about 20 megabits a second. And he wasn't allowed to tell me how many people, but he said a significant proportion of the people that watched actually ended up watching in 4K. Mm-hmm. And they actually ended up handling all the 4K streams by the end of the game. So that's pretty impressive, I think, to have done that.
Yeah, maybe we'll have Verizon Media handle the vote counting in Iowa next year.
That'd be a good idea.
Since that seems like something they could probably handle before breakfast in the morning, I think so.
But anyway, so that's the Super Bowl. There was some other interesting news this week. I think Disney Plus, well, sounds like they hit it out the park with their launch, didn't they?
No other way to put it, Colin. Boy, we're going to spend a few minutes here talking about Disney Plus, which had its results announced for the first time earlier this week. And then we also want to talk about YouTube and YouTube TV, where Google broke out their results for the first time this week also, after basically keeping them as a state secret. But first, to talk about Disney Plus, yeah, a winner, boy, by any definition. And anybody that's not giving them huge credit, I think, is really underselling the story. They ended their Q1, their fiscal Q1, with 26.5 million subscribers. Then they said that in the time up until February 3rd, when they announced their earnings, they added another 2.1 million subscribers. So 28.6 million. Even more than that, obviously, just a few days later. But I would say, all in all, very impressive, pretty close to the 30 million that they said they were targeting for the end of this year. So they're basically almost about a year ahead of schedule. Now, there are caveats to add, of course, which is, we know that they told us they added 10 million on launch day. So they got out of the gate very fast. So you can't do a straight average on number of subs that they added. We know that their content currently is a little bit underpowered. So we don't know what kind of churn rate they're experiencing once people have watched The Mandalorian or a couple of movies that they've really wanted to watch that they missed, or their kids wanted to watch, who knows what. We don't know what the churn rate looks like. We also know that there were some deals and promotions floating around. So it's still early days to see just how sticky or how high quality those 28.6 million subscribers actually are, but certainly a very impressive start. And then just to say two other quick things. One is that we're going to have the launch of Disney Plus internationally coming up in March. They actually accelerated the launch by a week. They announced that some time ago, but they're going to be launching in 5 of the big European countries on March 24th, the UK, Ireland, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Switzerland, and Austria. That's more than 5 countries. I think that's 7, actually, pardon my math. And then they're going to be later this summer in Belgium, the Nordics, and Portugal. And they also announced that they're going to launch in India at the end of March, and that's going to be in conjunction with Hotstar. So they have a lot going on the international front. Just to come back to the domestic front for a second, I thought it would be interesting to compare what that massive first quarter looked like compared to Netflix. And it's a little bit of an apples and oranges because it's kind of includes December, but not January. I won't get into too much detail, but the net of it is that Disney Plus had a bigger first quarter out than we've seen from Disney had a bigger first quarter out than Netflix has had. And there's obviously a lot of discussion in the industry as to whether Disney Plus is competition or complement to Netflix. We've yet to see how that plays out, but I would say that Disney Plus is going to be very soon as big a player in the US as Netflix is. And whether everyone decides they need to have both or people decide they need to have one versus the other is remains to be seen. But I just think it's a huge, huge launch for Disney Plus to do everything to get it off the ground. No real technology or delivery hiccups. All the content that's available, messaging the whole thing to Wall Street, launching at this kind of scale. It's all very impressive to me.
Yeah. Similarly, I'm impressed. As you say, Will, though, I think that there's going to be a core of people, families, for example, who will stay subscribed to the service with the content that's there right now. But the rest, if they really want to get to 60 million, it's going to require a lot of content. Netflix is making sure that every single time you come into that service, there is something new for you to watch, and Disney needs to do the same, and they are a long way from that today. That said, with a company that size and with the media properties that they have, ramping to that level shouldn't be a stretch. That's certainly within the bounds, but they will have to, I think, make some sacrifices on their classic distribution model to do that. That could be painful. We know that they're taking some charges for lost licensing revenue because they're reserving that content for Disney Plus, and they're going to have to do more of that, I think, if they're going to really hit the 60 million that they're looking for. That said, I've got a feeling that they're certainly going to do well in Europe. I saw a study that suggested that 6.5 million people in the UK wanted to get the service at the price that it was that they were discussing. So I have a feeling that there'll be strong demand in the UK and in the rest of Europe. So I've got a feeling that they've, the 60 million target that they've set for themselves by the end of, I think it was 2021, or was it 2020, Will? I can't remember. I think that's totally doable based on their performance here. But as you say, it's keeping them that's going to be a really huge challenge for the company.
Yeah, one other thing also I think worth noting here is the role of Hulu. And we know that they've been bundling Hulu with Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, but Hulu also turned in a very strong quarter and a very strong year. They ended on the SVOD side with 27.2 million subscribers. That was up 29% versus the year before. But even more impressive was the number of Hulu Live subscribers, which at the end of 2019 was 3.2 million, up from 1.7 million the year before. And that is, I think, a little bit of a secret sauce here for Disney Plus and increasing the subscriber rate, because they've got a huge base of people that they can market to directly. They're bundling at a really nice price point, and Hulu's going to be investing, as we know, heavily in content as well. So they could become, you know, one-stop shop is maybe a little bit too strong a word, but they would definitely have some value along the spectrum of being considered a one-stop shop for lots of families between Hulu Live, SVOD, Disney Plus, and ESPN Plus. That's a lot of good stuff in one package.
It is, but let's not forget Hulu is really only a factor in the US market today. Yes. Now, they have said that they're planning on launching it internationally, yes. Although I have got to tell you, Will, I don't know how they're going to do that because it's, you know, Hulu with Hulu Live, it's really, really dependent on the broadcast content that comes into it on a regular basis, and they do not have those relationships in the rest of the world that they would need, I think, to build a Hulu out. And let's be honest, Hulu is so successful in the US because it has all of the best US TV content.
Yep.
That's what they would have to have, the same proposition, I think, if they were going to be successful in each of the regions that they've released. And that's a really, really big task. That said, I was very surprised that Hulu put on any increase at all, because I think the last time they announced that, they said they had 3 million, which was just before they increased the price by $10, which is a big price increase. So for them to actually add another couple of 100,000 subscribers, in spite of the fact that they just increased the price $10, and they suggested that people add live when they want to watch live TV and then drop it, I think that's pretty impressive as well.
I agree. They're the number one virtual MVPD now, and they appear to be very strong, to be very well received, as you say, despite the price increase.
Yep, and they certainly do. And talking about the number one MVPD, let's talk about the number three, which is YouTube TV. We actually finally got definitive word from Alphabet, Sundar Pichai, in their Q4 call. He said that the company has got over 2 million subscribers to YouTube TV now, which is actually, I got to tell you, Will, it's a little bit low. I felt like it's lower than I was expecting. And here's why. I've been seeing a lot of surveys that have had very high numbers of people that say that they're quote using YouTube TV, and a lot of that, you know, some of it was as high as 8% of respondents in a survey would say that they were using it, and a lot of that I attributed to confusion between YouTube and YouTube TV. So when people were actually, you know, when they were asked about YouTube TV, they just thought, am I watching YouTube on TV or something like that. But even if it was only half of that, there'd still be more like 3 million, 4 million subscribers than 2. Plus, they have been investing so heavily in promoting the service, sponsoring the World Series. They've sponsored the pregame show in the last two Super Bowls. They were very, very present in the last Super Bowl this last weekend. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of disappointed that they aren't higher than 2 million.
Yeah, I agree. I thought 2 million felt a little bit light for them, and I'm not sure what the explanation is. I would only add anecdotally that I feel like lots of people that I know that have cord shifted to YouTube TV, not any of the other services. That's not anything scientific, but just sort of word of mouth. But beyond YouTube TV, Colin, I think what Google disclosed with respect to YouTube's overall performance really demonstrated how powerful this company is already and potentially is going to be down the road. So some quick math that I did suggests that YouTube total revenue, which includes advertising, the subscriptions with YouTube Music and YouTube Premium, and then, of course, YouTube TV, as we're talking about, that the total of those revenue streams in 2020 could exceed $25 billion in revenue. And it's become a very interesting business, evolved so far from its roots as a user-generated content company. We all remember those early days, those little viral, we didn't have the term then, but there's the little videos that would get passed around by email, and cats on the skateboard and this other, you know, sort of nonsense, and what they've become today. So I looked at the three segments, and YouTube advertising, I think, could be $19 billion in 2020. YouTube Music and YouTube Premium could be a little over $2 billion in 2020. And then YouTube TV could be around $1.5 billion in 2020, assuming that they average 2.5 million subscribers per month, which, again, to your point, seems a little bit modest, but who knows? But anyway, you put all that together, you get to 22.5. And one of the big things I think that we really need to keep an eye on going forward with YouTube TV is how aggressive Google/YouTube decides to be with that service, because they're now at $50 a month. We know that they bumped that up from the $35 rate that people were grandfathered in, like I was, a $40 rate for newer customers. So they're at 50. If they keep that at 50 and they can get a disproportionate amount of market share and cord cutting continues to accelerate, meaning more people are becoming sort of the targetable universe for YouTube TV, they could grow pretty strongly. And if they just keep the $50 price point intact for a while, even if they're break even on a cost basis, cost of delivery with the cost of the underlying programming, then essentially all that they're doing is just creating more and more inventory for them to monetize. And I would argue that YouTube TV has a better method of monetizing, in other words, monetizing eyeballs at a higher rate than any TV network can do. And so in a sense, they look a little bit like the playbook that Roku is running right now, where Roku is, you know, for all intents and purposes, giving the players away, not totally, but, you know, we're talking single digit gross margin at this point, as a way of creating inventory so that they can become an advertising company. And Google, of course, already is the world's biggest advertising company. The main thing they need is high quality video inventory. And that seems to me like the playbook that they could run here. So if they stay aggressive on price, keep it low, keep the service looking great, which it already has been from day one, fantastic service, I think they could really continue to grow very nicely. And depending upon how the big traditional operators contract, I think it's entirely possible, if you look down the really, really long term, that YouTube TV could end up being the biggest operator of all the operators. Because if they keep the price low and they can monetize the ads high, they're going to be in the prime position to keep this model alive that no one else can do. So I think YouTube TV is really a company to watch going forward.
Yeah, I do too. It's one of my favorites. I think it's one of the two. I use two. Well, I have a bunch of them, but I use two, and that's Sling TV and YouTube TV. I think it's a very easy to use system. And I've got to tell you that you hit the nail on the head there for YouTube and for Google. I think it really doesn't matter if they don't make money on the subscription price. And I actually don't think they're making money on the subscription price. I think they're probably giving most of that directly to the programmers. But the extra inventory does so much for them. They've had a problem with brand safety. This is brand safe content. They've rolled this premium inventory into their premium advertising pool that they're selling to advertisers, which is, you know, that just makes it lily white. Advertisers can feel very, very comfortable buying ads from that pool, knowing that they're getting premium inventory like that. So they have lots and lots of reasons, I think, to continue to invest and continue to allow YouTube TV to sell at cost. Mm-hmm. And as long as they continue to do that, I think they'll see growth. I'm really quite surprised that it hasn't gotten more subscribers. But I guess if they continue to push it, they're really, when you think about it, Will, they're the only company that really can promise you to have the main local channels that are available to you. They're the ones that have gone after those the hardest and pretty much have blanket coverage in all of the major markets. So, and of course, they also have their unlimited DVR, which is pretty unique in the business.
The only thing they're missing, Colin, I've said it 100 times, is That unlimited DVR is fantastic, but they need to allow people to download those shows to their devices.
Yep.
It's such a yep. limitation. I have so many shows DVR'd on YouTube TV backed up in my queue that I just don't have time to watch that I would love to be able to do, to be able to watch when I'm on the elliptical or on a plane or,
yep.
you know,
yep.
whenever. But they just, I don't know what the issue is there, that they can't get that download feature across the line. I don't know what the yeah. issue is.
Yeah, me too. I think I ran some calculations on the disk space they need to store all of the shows that we've got, and it's a ridiculous amount. But like you, you know, you set up a recording of a show that's in syndication, and you basically end up with all of the show
yeah.
over a period of time. And as you say, if you can't download it, you can't watch it when you're at the gym or in those odd moments. But hopefully they're listening and they'll pay attention and add yeah. the feature.
And on that note, I think we're just about out of time, but I have to say one last thing with the Oscars coming up on Sunday night. I so hope that Joe Pesci wins Best Supporting Actor for The Irishman, because that performance was off the charts. And I know Brad Pitt won the Globe for it, but man, I'm really rooting for Joe Pesci. How about you?
Well, believe it or not, I haven't seen The Irishman
oh,
yet.
Oh, my God, Colin. How do I talk with you when you haven't seen The Irishman?
my favorite show on Netflix right now, Will, is The Kaminsky Method. I watched
binge those two seasons like there was nobody's business. They were great.
Is it?
They were
you know,
great.
Netflix deserves thanks because it makes shows like that. Those sort of shows just don't get made anymore.
Yeah,
they were never made. It's a great show.
Yeah, but you know, Colin, just as a caveat, unless I'm wrong, I don't think Kaminsky Method has been renewed for season 3 yet anyway. So I don't know what's going on with that show.
Well, that's really surprising. I mean, Reed Hastings is an old geezer like us, right?
I could be wrong. Maybe they've renewed it and I just missed it. But as of about a month or so ago, it had not been renewed yet for season 3. So.
All right, podcast listeners, start writing in now.
Yeah, enjoy it while you can. All right, Colin, good chatting as always. Enjoy your time in L.A. And thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. We'll see you all again next week.